Hello and welcome to this GCP short, produced in partnership with Zurich Insurance and with a real focus on social inflation, international employee benefits, and the broader captive growth environment in America. We have four guests in this episode, including Adriana Scherzinger, Head of Captives and Alternative Risk Solutions at Zurich North America, and Alan Kirsch, SVP and Head of Claims, Judicial and Legislative Affairs at Zurich North America too. Both share with us the direction of travel for social inflation and what the commercial market is doing to mitigate its impact, while considering, of course, the knock-on effect for captives and how they can respond. We are also joined by two leaders from Zurich Global Employee Benefit Solutions, Arnal Via, Head of ZJEBS, and Guy Worsey, Director of Customer and Distribution Management for the Americas. If you would like more information on Zurich Insurance, you can visit their Friend of the Podcast page on the Captive Intelligence website. There are links in the episode show notes. So, Alan, great to have you on the podcast for the first time, and a real social inflation expert as well. So, and that's how we're going to start this podcast. We hear a lot about social inflation in the context of insurance more broadly. How have you seen this develop further over the past 2 years, and how is it impacting insurance claims and insurance programs?
Sure. Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it. So first of all, I think it's really important to understand what we mean when we talk about social inflation. And really, in summary, it is the increase we've seen in loss costs over the last 10 years or so. So then we look to what are the drivers of that? Why is that happening? And there are a number of drivers that we've identified, and I'll just quickly give a review of them. First is the changing juror demographics we've seen. Younger jurors just have a different attitude towards being a juror. They also have a different attitude towards a lot of the corporate defendants that we defend in these matters. So they tend to be a little bit more distrustful, I'll say, of corporations, and they view their role as a little different than some of the older jurors. So these younger jurors really view their role as a protector of the community. So when plaintiff's attorneys make an argument that you need to send a message, let's say, to the corporate defendant that you won't accept this kind of conduct, that really resonates more with the younger jurors. The next driver we've seen really ties in with that, and that is the changing tactics the plaintiff's attorneys have been using. One of them is called the reptile theory, where they tap into a juror's sense of anger or fear. Really, the arguments they use that, you know, you need to send a message to this corporate defendant tends to drive up these jury verdicts. And with increased jury verdicts, we see increased settlements around that as well. There's a number of other plaintiff tactics that they use that really are driving this as well. One is what we call jury anchoring. So anchoring is really where the plaintiff's attorney starts right from the start, suggesting very large numbers for the value of the case. So even when they're choosing the juror, the prospective juror is asked the question, are you comfortable awarding $10 million in this case? So right from the start, the juror in his or her mind feels like, oh, I guess this case is worth $10 million. So they start establishing these high values right from the very beginning and continue that theme through the rest of the trial. Some jurisdictions do not allow that, but most do, and the plaintiff's attorneys are really utilizing that. We've also seen a rise in litigation funding. So these are third-party litigation funders who are really driving a lot of litigation and also frustrating the ability to resolve these cases. They lend money to the plaintiffs, they lend money to the law firms at extremely high interest rates. And as a result, the value of the case, at least for the plaintiff, is greatly increased as a result of that. And then overall, I would point to just the legal landscape here in the United States. There has been eroding tort reform for many, many years. A lot of the laws in these jurisdictions really do favor the plaintiff's attorneys, make it easier for them to put up large numbers in front of the juror, and make it more difficult for the defendant to really defend these cases. So when we look at this in totality, these are the drivers that we've seen of social inflation.
Thanks, Alan. Some really useful context to set us up there. And we're going to be coming back to Alan towards the end of the podcast to talk just about kind of what insurers like Zurich can do about this and what captives can do regarding social inflation. But Adriana, let's come to you now, and great to have you back onto the podcast again. What do captives have to be cognizant of with regards this social inflation trend, and how are you seeing them respond?
Hi, Richard. I'm glad to be back. Thank you for having me. Social inflation can make underwriting more challenging as it introduces additional uncertainties related to changing legal landscapes, jury trends, and societal attitudes. It often leads to higher settlements and jury verdicts. Captives, like other insurers, may experience increased claims costs due to the impact of societal factors, such as Alan mentioned, changing attitudes towards lawsuits and higher expectations regarding compensation. Captives working closely with their fronting carriers use insights from industry claims to make smart decisions about handling risks. And dealing with challenging claims needs a quick and proactive legal team. And Zurich team here in the United States ensure fast and experienced management. Captives also help their parent companies by promoting safety and also offering insurance coverage for units with excellent risk practice, encouraging innovation. However, taking on risk tied to public sentiment requires more, requires a parent company to convey social engagement and responsibility to build trust.
So we've obviously seen, Adriana, over the past couple of years, great growth in captives. You know, I think record numbers of growth of new captives and more premium and assets under management in captives in 2022. And all the indicators are that 2023 will be replicating that. We track very closely the numbers of new captives being formed in jurisdictions all around the world. Vermont, which is always a good indicator, is certainly on track to kind of replicate its growth in 2022 this year. And I think we're going to get the latest numbers from there very soon as well. Outside of the commercial market environment, Adriana, what do you view as the key primary drivers of this captive growth?
Richard, this year has been another busy and successful growth year for the captive insurance industry. Interest in captives continue to grow, and those captives come in several sizes and forms, including single parent captives, cell captives, group captives. The drivers of captive growth outside of the commercial market environment are diverse and often stem from a desire for greater control, cost savings, and customization of coverage and strategic risk management. Another compelling trend that we are seeing is the higher percentage of captive premiums seated within insurance programs and the broadening use of captives beyond the conventional scope. A notable example is the inclusion of U.S. medical stop loss, international employee benefits, financial lines, cyber, and also third-party business within captive structures. Here in the United States, where regulators remain keen to support the captive concept, we see a health competition between the captive domiciles. Several of the U.S. domiciles further position themselves as attractive options for captive formation, which enhance the captive owner's ability also to operate efficiently, investing in people, resources, in order to react to the ongoing demand.
Yeah, you mentioned that healthy competition there, Adriana, between domiciles. And I think it's great that we have established captive domiciles like, you know, your Vermonts or Hawaii's or South Carolina's and others in the United States. But I think that domicile proliferation across the country has really helped to spread the kind of mainstream nature of captives and make captives more people to hear about captives, but make them a more appealing option to more and more businesses. Guy, great to have you on the podcast. I've seen you on the road a few times this year, so it's great to have you on the pod for the first time. We've been talking about social inflation there, kind of primarily in the P&C context, but of course your focus is on the employee benefits world, and we hear a lot about rising healthcare costs. So how do rising healthcare costs impact employee benefits programs?
Hi, Richard. Thanks very much for having me on. We're seeing increasing healthcare costs around the world, and this has been going on for a number of years. And global employers are trying to get a hold of the increases, but each market, as expected, is different.
So what we're seeing is that inflationary economic trends and therefore rising costs of medical care is pushing up the cost of claims, and it's certainly one of the factors contributing to social inflation. This increase of medical costs have significant impacts on employee benefit programs in several ways. So the simple one is we are seeing rising of healthcare premium, and this is putting a strain on both employers and employees that sometimes manifest in later on reduced coverage or increased cost sharing, which is not great. Something that we are seeing as well is that this can trigger limiting the options. So employers may be compelled to limit the choice of healthcare providers or networks available to employees. And this is blocking the ability for employees to access the preferred doctors or medical facilities that they had. Something that is that we see that is happening as well is that this is impacting on other benefits. As we know, healthcare so is a big part of what organizations are spending on employee benefits. And then if there is this medical inflation that is happening in there, so this can have an impact on other programs and line of businesses as well.
And Anil, we saw at the European Captive Forum that Captive EB, employee benefits, was a very hot topic. Lots of new business coming in and expanding programs. I get the impression that when captives do go down the employee benefits route, they're kind of always keen to learn more. They really embrace it and want to see what else they can do or what they can do differently. What were the hot topics of discussion in Luxembourg last month on this topic?
Richard, you're absolutely right. European Captive Forum was, again, a great, great event. So I think that this time, so if I'm not mistaken, so we were over 700 attendants in there, bringing customers, consultants, providers, and regulators at the same place, discussing how captives can help organizations in different fields, right? This time in particular, and allow me for that, so Zurich employees, we will remember this edition for a long time, as we were awarded to be the best EB captive network. This is a little thing, but it's a reward of the hard work that the team has been putting into it for the last years. And it also reassures us that we are on the right track and gives us plenty of energy to keep working as we do. This event once more reminded us about the great opportunity that we have in the EB space when we speak about captives. Because we see that more and more organizations, they are transitioning into it or they are considering to do so. We see that there are over 4,000 organizations that use captives for property and casualty risk, but less than 200 for EB risk, right? So there is big opportunity in there. Those organizations that they are already including EB risk into the captives, they are showcasing the traditional benefits from a financial standpoint, diversification, solvency topics, but they are as well showing the benefits that these vehicles have in the ESG space. Overall, employee benefit captives provide a platform for companies to integrate their ESG goals into their employee benefit programs, promoting employee well-being, sustainability, and responsible investment practices.
And Guy, how are you seeing then captive employee benefits trends evolve for multinational companies headquartered in the United States? Why is there greater interest in reinsuring international employee benefits now than perhaps ever before?
We're seeing a really increase in activity from the US-based companies. They're catching up quickly with global interest around reinsuring their employee benefits around the world to their captives. Traditionally, they've looked at non-life programs for their captives, but are now taking interest in the global self-insurance model and a captive can provide. I think US employers historically have been able to self-insure their US healthcare, which has been mostly led from their HR benefits teams. And as you can imagine, those are huge sums assured and premiums. But now the interest is from risk management is to get a hold of what's going on in the rest of the world. And these are large amounts, as there's large amounts of money being spent there as well.
So, Alan, let's finish then by returning to social inflation. You laid out at the very beginning kind of some of the trends and how we're seeing it develop, and it doesn't look like a great picture going forward. What is Zurich doing, or what can Zurich do to kind of mitigate some of that impact on claims?
Sure. Well, there is cause for some optimism, and I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But I think that the creation of my current role in and of itself, I think, shows Zurich's commitment to this. I'm the head of claims, judicial, and legislative affairs, and myself and my team really consider ourselves like a social inflation task force. This position, my team, is unique. It's unique to Zurich and it's unique to the industry. So when I look back at those drivers, though, the changing juror demographics that I spoke of and Adriana spoke of as well, we've been educating our claims staff, our defense attorneys, and our customers, as well as the broker community on what those changing juror demographics are. So, you know, getting them to understand how do we present the best possible defense to this case? What is going to resonate with a juror? What is not going to resonate with a juror? And I think being better prepared for these jury trials and better prepare for the defense of these cases is certainly one area where we can really combat this. Looking at the plaintiff tactics, it's a very similar response, that just making sure our claims folks and our attorneys, when they're in court, are doing the right things. If the plaintiff is going to anchor on a large number, a defense attorney should get up there and also ask a prospective juror if they're also comfortable awarding $0 if they don't think the liability threshold has been met, as an example. So, you know, when it comes to litigation funding, when it comes to the legal landscape, Zurich is doing a lot in this space to really advocate for more regulation for litigation funding. When this really became more popular several years ago, there was absolutely no regulation of this. And these third-party carriers, third-party insurers, or third-party lit funders were able to charge any kind of interest rate they wanted. There was, you know, no oversight in terms of conflicts of interest, in terms of their ethics. So we've really been pushing the trade associations that we work with, as well as directly advocating with certain legislators to start creating more regulation around this. And I'm happy to say that, you know, each year we see more and more jurisdictions doing exactly that. I think that we're between 8 and 10 jurisdictions which have passed laws now regulating the litigation funding space. So glad to see that, and we keep pushing for that. When it comes to tort reform overall, myself and my team are really pushing all of the states to really recognize that this situation is getting worse. It is creating an insurance crisis in the United States. Several states have already recognized that. I'll use the example of Florida. Florida was a location where the laws truly did favor the plaintiffs. And, you know, we have been fighting for years to really get the legislators to understand what the impact of that, as well as the governor in the state of Florida. And finally, when they saw the insurance crisis come to fruition, because several carriers either went out of business or just left the state completely, they did start to realize they needed to do something. So earlier this year, Florida passed really historic tort reform, which addressed a number of the problematic types of laws they had there. So Zurich really has been building an industry-wide coalition to really fight for this. And we've engaged a number of other carriers, the broker community, our customers as well, to really get together. And while we may not agree on everything, we can certainly agree on enough things, such as litigation funding and certain tort reform laws, that we can together really push for these laws and changes in the law.
That sounds great, Alan. It's good to hear that you guys are all getting organized. I mean, obviously, Zurich is a large organization and can kind of have an impact by pooling resources and bringing different groups together. How about captives, though? Is there anything that the captives themselves can do if they recognize that they've really kind of been impacted by social inflation with regards to their claims? Is there anything captives can do to kind of mitigate that?
Well, sure. Firstly, I would say that we invite them to be part of our coalition. What we have found is that while, you know, the legislators will listen to insurance companies, who they really want to hear from are their constituents, right? So when I think of the captives and what they have to offer is a lot of people and a lot of people who vote. So really getting them involved with the work that we're doing, being part of the coalition in terms of which states are we focused on, which issues are we focused on. It's a big tent and we want it to be even bigger. So I think, first of all, really important to get them involved in our efforts. It does impact, as everyone has already talked about here. Social inflation does impact, you know, the members of the captives significantly. So they've got an interest in being engaged and being involved. But I think they could also make a difference in terms of hoping or getting the members of the captives to understand what they can do individually, just at a claim by claim level. Certainly have, you know, good safety programs in place, make sure they're well documented. When an incident does occur, make sure that the evidence around the incident is well preserved. That's one of the things we've seen. If the evidence is not is destroyed for some reason or missing for some reason, the plaintiff's attorneys will use that to their advantage and sort of get the juror more angry about it and more suspect about it. So, you know, there's a number of things that I think the captives and their members can really do to help mitigate the risk.
Thanks, Alan. So, Adriana, just to finish off then, we've obviously heard about some of the challenges facing insurance buyers, whether it's on the social inflation side. Obviously, employee benefits presents a great opportunity for insurance buyers if they can get organized. Where do you expect to see kind of future growth of captives coming from next year? Is it going to be some of the same drivers we've been talking about already, or do you expect to see other areas?
Well, firstly, regarding social inflation, it's important to identify the unique drivers of social inflation and how to react to them. As Alan mentioned, a big part of it is education, educating our claims people, educating our defense attorney, educating our customers, educating our brokers on what those drivers are, what we all can do collectively and individually to really help mitigate them. Secondly, on the P&C side, property captives are on the rise, Richard, especially linked to climate change effects. Combining a property-focused captive with loss control procedure offers cost-effective long-term coverage. In the cyber market, things are stabilizing as we see. Defined risks and mitigation steps lead to a better understanding of policies. Smaller rates increase while captives remain available to fill gaps in cyber policies. Ramping up here, as we discuss, are the U.S. multinationals that started to take interest in international employee benefits. And captives particularly are appealing to global organizations facing different medical and insurance environments in the places which they do business. So, for example, a company with operations in the United States, Middle East, and Europe is required to comply with different local requirements, but can use their captives to serve the specific requirements of each market. We'll definitely see more international employee benefits being implemented in the coming years. Richard, the outlook for 2024 is positive for the continued growth and the use of captives.
Fantastic, Adriana. Well, thank you for organizing this podcast and thank you for a great discussion.